Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q2 H1 FY26 earnings conference call of Bharat Parenterals Limited, hosted by PhillipCapital PCG Desk. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Prachi from PhillipCapital India Private Limited, PCG Desk. Thank you, and over to you.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of PhillipCapital Private Client Group, I welcome all of you to Q2 H1 FY26 earnings conference call of Bharat Parenterals Limited. Today, from the management, we have Mr. Bahin Desai, Director Strategy and IR. I now hand over the conference to Mr. Bahin for his opening remark, and then we'll open the floor for question and answer. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Prachi. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today for Bharat Parenterals Limited's earnings call for second quarter of fiscal 2026. I am Bahin Desai, Director Strategy and Investor Relations, and it's my pleasure to share with you the key highlights of the quarter and our outlook for the months ahead. On the performance overview side, this quarter was one of the strategic execution and operational upgrades for Bharat Parenterals. On a standalone basis, our revenue from operations stood at 41.7 crores compared to 64.5 crores in Q2 last year and 94.4 crores in Q1 of FY26. The decline was anticipated and primarily driven by three factors: a planned near one-month production break to upgrade our general injectables line to higher ORAC standards, a temporary softness in institutional offtake after an exceptionally strong quarter first, and the deferral of export dispatches, most of which are expected to roll in quarter three. Despite the lower volumes, our gross margins expanded sharply to 44.1% compared with  33.5% last year and 33.4% in Q1. This improvement reflects our continued shift towards higher value products, stronger procurement discipline, and manufacturing efficiency. EBITDA stood at 2.3 crores, translating to a 5.6% margin, and PAT was 2.7 crores with a 6.5% margin. While profitability was impacted by lower throughput, we remain firmly profitable, a testament to resilience of our business model. We expect momentum to recover strongly in H2 of FY26 as capacity utilization improves and institutional orders normalize. On the consolidated performance, the revenue stood at 64.6 crores, a 10% decline year-on-year and a 44% sequentially. However, the underlying performance strengthened significantly. Gross profit rose 26% year-on-year to 37.7 crores, with margins expanding to 58.3% from the previous 41.8%. Consolidated EBITDA turned positive at 80 lakhs compared with a loss of 7.7 crores in Q2 FY25. Our net loss nearly halved, improving 51% year-on-year to 8.6 crores, demonstrating the impact of our cost discipline and margin improvement initiatives across the group. We are taking a deeper dive at Enoxel Life Sciences, our subsidiary. The highlight of the quarter was undoubtedly the achievement at our complex generic subsidiary Enoxel Life Sciences. On July 30th, 2025, Enoxel received the Establishment Inspection Report, EIR, from the US FDA, officially confirming the US FDA approved status for its Vadodara manufacturing facility. This milestone marks a transformational step for the Bharat Parenterals Group, paving the way for commercial supplies to the US market as well as the EU market and establishing our credibility in the regulated markets. During the quarter, Enoxel finalized seven new strategic partnerships, including six CMO contracts and one out-licensing deal, together valued at $1.85 million in licensing and milestone income. Its pipeline now includes around 20 active products, both which are 505(b)(2) NDAs, complex ANDAs, and also including long-acting as well as liposome-based injectables, with more than 40 molecules under lifetime development. An EU GMP inspection is expected in second half of this fiscal, with first commercial filings targeted in Q1 of FY27. Quarterly costs remain stable between 14 and 16 crores per quarter, and the business is well on track towards operational break-even in FY26. Our core B2L operations continue to strengthen their foundation. We renewed our WHO GMP certification, cleared the NASDAQ audit of Nigeria, and secured new product registrations across Myanmar, Kenya, Peru, and Vietnam. Infrastructural upgrades, including the ORAB lines and purified water systems in the beta-lactam block, have further enhanced quality, compliance, and readiness for the upcoming audits. We were also proud to be recognized as Manufacturing SME of the Year, Health and Pharma by HSBC and CNBC TV18, a reflection of our consistent excellence in manufacturing and innovation. Our domestic formulations arm, Varenium Healthcare, continues to perform well, strengthening its position in institutional channels and expanding into complex injectables. It remains on track to deliver 60 to 65 crores in FY26 revenue, a healthy 21% growth over last year. The outlook ahead. We remain confident of a strong rebound in H2 FY26. For the standalone business, we maintain our FY26 guidance of 12 to 14% revenue growth with EBITDA margins of 15 to 17%, supported by a robust order book and improved utilization. Inoxil is expected to deliver 65 to 70 crores in revenue this year, driven by milestone receipts, while commercial CMO supplies are expected to commence from Q1 of FY27. Inoxil also stands to be breaking even on EBITDA levels this year. Varenium Healthcare will continue to expand its reach across critical care and anesthesia segments, reinforcing BPL's domestic presence. At a consolidated level, we expect FY26 with a clear path towards positive PAT by 27, supported by recovery in standalone operations and sustained progress at Inoxil. In summary, Q2 was a quarter of investment, execution, and long-term strengthening, a period where we laid groundwork for sustainable growth in FY27 and beyond. We enter the second half of the year with our most critical US FDA milestone achieved, our core margins improving, and a well-defined roadmap for the growth ahead. On behalf of the entire team at BPL, I extend my heartfelt thanks to our employees, partners, leaders, and shareholders for their continued support and trust. Lastly, I would like to thank Philip Capital for arranging this call. Thank you so much. Jai Hind.
Thank you. We will now begin with a question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. We take our first question from the line of Bajrang Bafna from Sunidhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, one second.
Is it audible?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Just to get a sense, the FY26 guidance, you indicated that you'll be able to maintain the FY26 guidance and H2 is going to be better than H1. So if you could give some more color in terms of margins, which we will be able to manage for FY26, and some guidance on the subsidiary business, you know, where we can see the break-even levels are going to be achieved and some profitability that can be seen in the subsidiary business. Thank you, sir.
Okay, sure. As stated ahead after the first quarter results and again right now, we maintain the guidance of 12 to 14% year-on-year growth in top-line revenue on standalone basis. The H2 of this financial year would be obviously a better in terms of top-line revenue when compared to H1. We expect quarter three and quarter four to be on the higher end based on the order book at hand and the commitments received from institutional as well as our regular buyers. Based on that and the operational effectiveness that we were able to achieve in quarter two, we remain hopeful of achieving our EBITDA margin improvement anywhere between 15 and 17% for this fiscal year. Moving on to the subsidiary side, as stated, Inoxil Life Sciences would be turning EBITDA break-even this year, would be operationally breaking even, and there would be losses due to depreciation as well as interest and finance cost. For FY27, Inoxil is poised to become the first year where it would be PAT positive. On the other subsidiary, Varenium Healthcare, it is going to be a profitable year for Varenium from here on. This year, we are on in line to have a 10% PAT on the top line of Varenium. And that is translated in the numbers of Q1 as well as Q2, and we may expect to maintain the same levels across Q3 and Q4.
Got it. Just to get on Inoxil FY27, what could be the, sir, top line that we can assess based on the clarity from different clients on that, and what could be the the EBITDA margins in Inoxil in FY27?
So FY27 for Inoxil, the top line, obviously depending the US business and the EU business commencing from quarter one of 27, we expect the top line to be anywhere between 110 crores to 130 crores, 135 crores in top line, and EBITDA would be anywhere between 35 to 50 crores for next fiscal year.
Got it. Thank you. And just the base business, can we expect the similar growth trend of close to 15% in FY27 also? Standalone business with stable margins of 15 to 16%.
The margin stabilization has happened, so we expect the margins to continue. For further details on FY27, we would be waiting for quarter three because our order book for next year is still on the path of becoming full. So I do not have a guidance for FY27 on the base business for 15% growth, but we expect an overall growth of 10 to 12% over the next 5 years on the standalone basis.
Got it. Thank you. And all the very best, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We take the next question from the line of Anupam Agarwal from Lucky Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for my question. Hi, Bhaim. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Anupam.
Trying to understand on the standalone business on the revenue front, we've seen some sort of lumpiness over the last many quarters. I understand large part of the business is institutional here, but in terms of the order book, what sort of order book and stability are you seeing in the business going forward?
So, Anupam, as I stated before, this in quarter two, almost the entire month of August was a non-operational month in the general injectable segment of the standalone business, which is one of the topmost revenue contributors of the organization due to upgradations in its manufacturing lines. That obviously hampered the operational output of the organization, along with the fact that quarter one was a high revenue quarter for us. So the institutional order book that was that we have right now was the orders in quarter two were not executed. Those orders are being executed in quarter three, and the numbers should be reflected in quarter three and quarter four numbers on standalone basis based on the order book that we have in hand.
If I have to kind of eliminate the one-off situation of the upgradation, how much revenue incrementally we would have been able to do if the upgradation was not part of the plan?
We would have been somewhere a positive of last year's number. So we could have expected somewhere around 60 to 65 crores of revenue on the standalone basis.
Okay. What sort of upgradation is this? Is it some sort of a long-term plan or does this happen every year?
Yes. No. This was part of a strategic long-term planning. We upgraded our lines to an ORABS line, which is obviously a higher sort of so to just to give you an understanding, in Enoxil we have closed wraps, which is best in terms of sterility for aseptic filling. So similarly for the ROW markets, we upgraded our vial line to an ORAPS, which is obviously one step lower than the closed wrap lines. That was done for our upcoming audits at the BPL facility. We are expecting two major audits in the next year. One would be EU GMP audits of our newly built beta-lactam block, and the second would be a PIX audit for our general block. So for ensuring that we are compliant with the more stringent regulatory requirements, this was a planned upgradation taking place at the general line as well as in the beta line, where we have upgraded our water systems in order to be EU GMP compliant.
Understood. Just extending the standalone part again, the first quarter revenue of 94 crores, if I remember, also included part of the deferred revenue from the fourth quarter of the last year. Is my understanding right?
Some. It was a very small amount from the last quarter of last financial year. There were obviously.
Yeah. Any specific reason why Q1 was this high, and is there a seasonality in this order-driven institutional business?
So the institutional business, there is some sense of seasonality to it, but when we talk about quarter one numbers, there was a large order, institutional order that BPL bagged towards the start of this calendar year, for which the execution is supposed to be completed between 18 months. That started from April of this year. So the first tranche of that institutional order was completed in quarter one. The next couple of tranches are expected to be completed in this financial year, and the last tranche is expected to be completed in the first quarter of next financial year. So just to give you a little bit of brief on the institutional side, so that is the seasonality of it, because that's how they the government is taking those orders.
Okay. What was the contribution of export and domestic mix in the standalone business?
So exports stood at around 40% of the revenues, and domestic stood at 60% in quarter one. In quarter two, it was 70% export and 30% domestic.
Okay. Understood. What's the update on the domestic order that we received last year, the 210 crore institutional order?
That's the order that I spoke about, that the first tranche of it was completed in quarter one. Second and third would be completed in the H2. And the last tranche of it would be extended to Q1 of next financial year.
Understood. I'll come back in the queue if I have. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Bhagwan Chaudhary from Soup Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Chaudhary, your line is in the talk mode, sir. Please go ahead with your question. Mr. Chaudhary, your line is in the talk mode, sir. Please proceed with your question. As there is no response from the current questioner, we move on to the next participant. The next question is from the line of Dhruvesh Sanghvi from Prosperity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Bayan.
Hi, Dhruvesh.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Can you expand this time a little bit on what exactly Varenium Healthcare does? Because now the revenues are respectable 60-65 crores. Targeting 65 crores. And like when we say that this is branded on the critical care side, what is the market like? Where can we be? And what has been the overall experience and the margin profile of this business?
Sure. Varenium Healthcare is a branded domestic generics business. We have our own brands that gets manufactured at BPL as well as several other manufacturers across the country. Currently, around 45 different brands are being marketed in the country. It is a pan-India division, and over 200 MRs are working on the field at Varenium. It is currently a single division organization with more divisions lined up in the next 18 months. And currently we are into like anesthesia, critical care and pain management side of the IPM. If we talk about anesthesia, where our core competencies lie, we are in the top five when we speak in the country. We are behind the likes of Neon Labs, Troika, Themis and Samarth. And we are steadily taking steam and climbing the ladder when it comes to anesthesia. The overall understanding of this particular market, if we talk about the reported numbers in anesthesia, is somewhere around 700 to 800 crores of the total market. But since it's a purely injectable market, and a lot of it is directly to the institutions, which include corporate hospitals, semi-government as well as government institutes. Most of these data is not captured by, PharmaREC or IMS of the world. So it is a grossly underrated number when we talk about that. So the overall market opportunity for anesthesia in particular, we believe is somewhere between 1500 to 1800 crores for the IPM, and it's growing on a steady basis. Since there are only a handful of competitors in this particular segment, we expect our revenues to climb as we gain trust and goodwill over the time that we've been operating in the market, around 5 to 6 years. And we have been in the past the first company to launch one of the molecules in India after doing clinical trials and getting DCGI approval for the same. We would also be one of the companies launching another drug in a short span of time, which would be manufactured in India for the first time. So on the innovation front, Varenium has always been at the forefront of innovating in anesthesia space, coming out with incremental innovations, maybe a smart packaging required for cold chain management, or it could be a product which was not present in the domestic space and which after thorough clinical trials and getting the subsequent approvals was launched, or maybe a product which is currently just being imported and we'll be the first ones to get it in the market after getting it manufactured locally. So we've been very active in ensuring that we cover the length and breadth of the division at hand, while also carefully planning on the next division, which could help the company grow further. Just to give you a little bit of brief on the overall aspects of Varenium, we expect to cross the 100 crore mark in the next 18 to 24 months. And we aim to be at least a 250 to 300 crore top line company with 3 to 4 divisions that are in pipeline as we speak right now.
And currently, what are the margins like? I understand we are in investment phase here. And let's say if we potentially go to the 150-200 crore mark in this business, how does this work? And the headcount will, to achieve that, is it like 200-250 is enough, or we need to then increase the headcount to 300-350 here?
No, so in order for us to cover more territory and ground, with India also poised to double down on the number of hospitals that it has, definitely number of people on ground will increase for us to have a more effective coverage. So yes, but I expect that number to be well within 300 for this particular division. We expect the growth potential in this division alone to be somewhere between 120-150 crores, which should be achievable in the next few years while we also expand in other divisions in therapeutic areas. For this particular division, since 99% of our products are injectables and directly cater to the institutions, the margins are not as high as the prescription market. But we've been successfully been able to expand our margin profiles from 39% last year to 44%, 45% this year until the H1, and we continue those margins to be around the same levels for H2 as well. So there has been a good expansion. These are operational margins, yes.
40% operational margins. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. And I mean, I'll move to the standalone business. In terms of, like, I missed the initial commentary, but you mentioned that in spite of the fall in the current quarter for various reasons mentioned, we still are targeting a 15% growth YOY. So is that right? I mean, just a one-line summary, if you have already mentioned it, I'm sorry.
No, I have mentioned it already. We are expecting, based on the order book that we have in hand, and we expect that based on the execution of those orders, our year-end numbers would be somewhere between 12%-14% or 15% higher than in comparison to last year. So that is correct. That is the correct guidance that has been given.
Okay. Just one point here, that suppose if, I mean, with these new changes in terms of the global tariff structures, I know that we are not supplying to any of the so-called regulated markets, but with so much pressure or competition now India facing in terms of some sort of indirect taxation towards us, does it not heat up the competition for you in the smaller markets? Because now, isn't it natural to assume that a lot of large companies or mid-sized companies will start to warm up for the small revenue pools, which smaller companies like us were targeting historically? Does it increase competition for us in the smaller markets? Have you started seeing any of these things?
So, great question, first of all. Just to give you a little bit of brief on the tariff side, right? The U.S. has imposed tariff on two aspects, two different type of products coming into the U.S. as of now. That is the branded products as well as the patented products. Now, as things stand, generics, any and all type of generics are completely exempted for towards any type of tariffs. So initially, in the first few years of commercialization, especially from Enoxaparin, we do not have any products which are falling under branded or patented side of the business.
No, my question is.
Those are generics, right?
Correct. I'm sorry, my question.
No, I understand. No, I understand. I was actually covering that part and coming to the other question that you asked. So, yeah. So, it will not be covering from the Enoxaparin side. While the other aspect, what you asked is that, you know, because of this, the natural tendency of other manufacturers would be to shift to other markets. While, yes, on books, it does look like that, but the markets that we've been operating in were anyways quite, you know, heavily, it was a heavy competition market to begin with from the get-go. And there was a niche that was created for our organization because we started way back in early 2000s, where we were one of the handful ones supplying to these various ROW markets. We have long-standing relationships with our partners in these particular markets, may it be Africa as a continent, Latin America, Southeast Asia, or CIS region. So due to that, there is obviously a natural advantage that we have where our partners are with us since a decade or more. It does give us that little advantage of having that old partnership in place. But we are not sitting idle and, you know, just banking on that. That is why there are structural changes being made at the standalone business in order to get more stringent regulatory authorities to come and approve our plant so we can further go into newer territories using those accreditations. So EU GMP at our new beta block would help us get into markets where we are not currently at. PIX accreditation in our general block would help us go into markets where we are not currently at. So definitely we are also on a standalone basis working to ensure that, you know, while the competition may increase in the other ROW markets, we should be well poised to enter newer markets where, again, you know, there is a more stringent regulatory check required.
Great.
And I hope I was able to answer the question.
No. I think that was very fair, and thank you for the detailed reply. I'll just take liberty one more time and one more question, and then I'll join back the queue. On Varinium Bio, what is the status of the CAPEX? What was originally planned? How much is already spent? And by when we will be ready for the approval stage, or, I mean, if you can just lay down the pipeline there for the bio, Varinium Bio, the manufacturing.
So Varinium Bio was the total CAPEX outlay is around 120 crores, which is expected for the entirety of the plant. As of now, the general block is completely constructed. We are beginning the second phase of our construction, which would be the oncology block as we speak. Around 35 to 40 crores of investment has already been completed through internal accruals at BPL. So from BPL, I mean. And the rest will be going on as the plant gets further and further till the operations begin. We expect to be completely operational by FY26 end, and the regulatory phase to start by early 27, and which was our guidance to begin with, that we expect the commercialization to happen anywhere in at 27. So that is where we are at currently. We are on track to achieve that as we speak as of now.
Okay, thank you. I'll join back the queue.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Bhagwan Chaudhary from Shubh Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Chaudhary, your line is in the talk mode, so please proceed with your question. Mr. Chaudhary, your line is in the talk mode. Please proceed with your question, sir. As there is no response, we move on to the next question from the line of Anupam Agarwal from Lucky Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the follow-up. Bhai, just extending to last participant's question on Varinium Bio,
yes.
Are we earlier than what was indicated before?
I wouldn't say we are earlier. I would say we are on track. And we would continue to, obviously, for us, it makes more sense that we get this current phase completed as soon as possible. But we also understand that this phase is as important as any other phase, because this sets the foundation for clearance of various stringent regulatory authorities and what we've learned from Enoxil so far. So I would say that we are on track. I wouldn't say we are early or we're late.
Okay. And you mentioned regulatory to start from early FY27. So what kind of audits are we expecting? Which agencies and how much time will it go through?
So early 27 onwards, there would be various gap audits that would be taking place from our consultants, our GMP consultants. There would be various qualification activities going on before that. Then post that, there would be products which would be manufactured as exhibit batches. And using those products, we would be filing with our EU GMP, as well as obviously WHO GMP would be part of our plan over there as well. But the first filing that would happen would be in 27 for the EU authorities.
FY27 for EU, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Just coming to products, so like you've communicated before as well, the products will be largely similar what we are making in Enoxil.
Yes. So there are a few molecules at Enoxil which has large potential in the ROW emerging market space, but because of certain constraints, certain cost of goods that are not going to be able to, be lower from Enoxil, those products would be taken from at Varenium Bio and would be catered to those markets, specifically in the Latin American as well as Oceania region such as Australia. So those are the plans at Varenium Bio. But apart from that, a large portion of the BPL portfolio is also very lucrative when it comes to these particularly emerging markets. So both of the product portfolios would be used partly from Enoxil, partly from BPL.
Understood. Any guidance on terms of revenue that you want to give out maybe from the first year of operation at Varenium Bio?
I would say, Anupam, it's a little bit too early for me to give you that guidance as of now.
Okay.
Once we are somewhere close to completion, we will be able to give you that based on the number of products that would be targeting from the get-go.
Understood. Coming to Enoxil, you mentioned FY27 to be about 110 to 135 crores in revenue.
Correct.
Would you want to call out the mix between how much will be milestone revenue here and how much will be commercial supplies?
A little bit difficult, but what I can do, I can give you an indicative number on what is confirmed as of now. The rest would be keeping, like it would keep adding. The moment I add a project to my current list of projects, certain milestone payments get added to it, right? So that number would vary, but I would say around 65 crores of milestone revenue is confirmed for FY27 from the 130 odd crores of top line revenue that we're targeting. Rest would be from our commercial supplies that are poised to start from Q1 of 27. But the mix would be changing depending on the number of new projects that will be taking in Q3 and Q4, because those milestone payments would be reflected largely in the next financial year.
Understood. You mentioned that there were 6 CMO that we have, basically new 7 contracts that we signed. 6 are CMO and 1 is licensing. Do you want to throw some light on what these products are and who are the clients, sort of?
Unfortunately, from the CMO front, I won't be able to divulge too much of information. But what I can do is I can give you a split of domestic or international clients. I would say that around 50% of the CMO deals signed are large domestic players, domestic MNCs, and the 50% of the CMO deals are international clients, which are either based in EU or the US. On the licensing front, what we have signed is it's an injectable product. It's a general injectable product that has been signed, and that would be under ANDA route.
Under ANDA. Okay. Just breaking down the 20 products which are in pipeline, between 505 NDAs, the complex ANDAs and long-acting injectables, do you have a breakup there?
Yes. So between ANDA and 505B2, there is a good 60-40 split where 60% are these complex ANDAs, 40-45% are 505B2s. For long-acting injectables, we have 3 programs which are under the long-acting banner. So I can give you that number.
Okay.
Yes.
Understood. Just last question on the cost side. So 14-15 crores cost, is there a scope to maybe reduce the cost on a monthly or a quarterly basis here? Or is this sort of a annual run rate kind of a thing that has to, has to be incurred, and then on scale up of revenue is something that efficiency would come in?
No, so this cost base is fairly now stabilized. there won't be. I think obviously we are all trying to ensure that we run the operations as cost aware as possible. But for the size of the plant that it is, this is going to be a fairly stable cost base. We will, however, try and ensure that we have some sort of reduction in various. I mean, you know, there are certain subsidies that being a startup that would be there, but obviously that's not part of the OpEx. That would probably go towards the finance cost and, you know, the reduction in finances. So, again, coming back to your question of OpEx, I think we are fairly stabilized, and we see that this is would be something that would be required for us to continue operations at this level.
Understood. What is the R&D expense from this?
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. May we request you to please rejoin the question queue as we have several participants waiting for their turn.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Shubham Chaudhary from Shubh Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. My question is, how are you positioned on working capital and receivable after the Q2 slowdown?
Sorry, can you please repeat? Your voice is not very clear.
How are you positioned on working capital and receivable after the Q2 slowdown?
Okay. No, so, we are actually much better poised in terms of working capital. There were a lot of receivables which have been received in this quarter. In fact, the temporary working capital loans which were taken, packing credits which were taken to supply these large orders are already prepaid, and the debt levels have gone down on standalone basis. So, the slowdown will not affect in terms of our working capital in particular, if that's what you're asking. That is not going to be affected, basically.
Okay. So my next is on what is the funding roadmap for Inoxil, internal accruals or promoter infusion or external investors?
So, we are looking at all possibilities right now. There won't be I won't be able to tell you something specific as of now, but right now, Inoxil is pretty much on being able to manage by itself when it comes to its OpEx due to the milestone and licensing revenues that are coming. Wherever there is any type of shortfall which is there, obviously, the promoters are stepping in to ensure that the gaps are fulfilled. If there is any possibility of any strategic investment at a later stage, then that is a separate conversation, and maybe we can, when there is something concrete, we'll be able to throw some more light on it. But as of now, there is no need for us to have that additional infusion.
Okay. So how do you plan to improve disclosures or visibility to attract institutional investors post Inoxil commercialization?
See, Inoxil, being a business which is primarily for the U.S. markets, confidentiality will remain a key in terms of the products and the partners. So there, the disclosures will not be as open as I can give for other ROW markets. So that factor is going to remain going forward. But yes, we can transparently give you more insights on the deal sizes whenever those happen in terms of the total milestones that are expected. We can throw more light on the number of CMO programs that work at present. We can throw some light on what would be the split between the CMO clients that we have in terms of domestic or international clientele. And to a certain extent, we can give you guidance on the overall numbers that the company can do. But pretty much anything beyond that becomes confidential, and it can hamper our contracts that we have, which obviously all has strict confidentiality rules.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Dhruvesh Sanghvi from Prosperity Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah.
I just want to reconcile the numbers related to out-licensing agreements. The last count I had somewhere in December 24, we probably had commitments of out-licensing agreements of 100 crores, out of which I think until March 25, we have booked nearly 25 crores. If you can similarly tell that from the history of Inoxcel till date, what has been the total out-licensing agreement number and how much is already booked in the P&L revenues?
No, no. So,
a broad ballpark is fine.
Yeah. So, there are two aspects that we have to understand, that the licensing fee is not only for the products that Inoxcel has developed by itself. It is also for a one-time license cost for undertaking exhibit batches for a CMO project as well. So the last year numbers is a mix of both these numbers, which would be the CMO licensing fee as well as the CDMO licensing fee as well. So first of all, I just wanted to get that clarified. Second, it would be very difficult for me to give you a number, but if I have to give you a ballpark number, then I would say again, I don't have that information to give you somewhat of an accurate answer.
No problem. What I'm trying to look at is that if last year, okay, in the last 8 to 10 months, how many more out-licensing agreement deals in terms of numbers you have signed? Because I think when we hit some milestone, you had put some circular. So I'm just trying to understand what has been the additional deals done in the last 6 to 9 months, because I have the last December 24 number. So that is where I'm coming from. If you can, I just want to understand the progress in terms of conversion towards out-licensing agreements.
Okay. So, in terms of in totality, if I have to tell you, bit from December onwards, we have signed deals in double digits. The quarter two was around 7 that I already disclosed. Quarter one was somewhere around another 6 to 7. I honestly, I don't have that number with me. I can get back to you on a individual basis on email. I can give you that total number of deals that has happened from December onwards and give you the number that you're looking for more specifically.
Sure. No problem. And while we started, let's say from the fundraise time, we were thinking of 15 to 20, precisely probably 18 or 19 products. And of course, some changes would have happened on the way that, you know, we'll drop a couple of products. And some might have got added. So, but the number is still going to remain 20, or we are going to significantly increase, and because that will have some cost implications as well. So, if you can provide some thoughts here.
So, as of now, Dhruvesh, we started with roughly around 20 to 22 products at that point of fundraise that you're referring to. From there on, there have been a few projects which have been scrapped because they were no longer relevant, or maybe the competitors moved in earlier, or the market potential that was anticipated was not there. So a few projects dropped out, but in contrast, there were other projects which filled in as well. So the number still is around 20, 21 roughly. But what has now been outlined by the management is that in the lifetime of the organization, we would be having around 40 products, and we would maintain that 40 products under our own banner. That is, we would be developing those 40 products and then out-licensing them up to a total of 40 products from this particular plant.
Okay, that's helpful. And I also wanted to ask that we initially thought that the EU approval will come probably earlier than US FDA, and naturally we were surprised by the reverse thing happening. What is the overall learning out of this, that, and I mean, why so, and you can give some
We had confirmed dates for May. It was the same week that India-Pakistan war happened. Because of the travel advisory, we had a confirmed inspection from Portugal. And because of that, there was a travel advisory, and those inspections got cancelled for those dates. and then we were given a later date, much later date. Since we were already in touch with the Belgian authorities as well, the Belgian authorities confirmed earlier on, and now the EU inspections are going to happen shortly from the Belgian authorities.
Okay, so now it is triggered through the Belgium authorities is what you are saying?
Yes, because the first week of May is when we completed, second May we completed our US FDA audits, and I think in the next few days the war broke out. So that's when the inspections got delayed, because May it was confirmed dates we had from the Portugal authorities, and because of the war the delay happened. There is nothing other aspect to it apart from that.
Okay, fine, thank you, and looking forward to see another round of discussion maybe 6 months later. Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we take that as the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vaheem Desai for closing comments.
So again, thank you all for tuning in for quarter two of FY26, financial results for quarter two of FY26. We welcome all the questions, and we look forward to the improved performance in the H2 of FY26 going forward. Thank you again for joining in and taking the time out. Jai Hind.
Thank you. On behalf of Phillip Capital India Private Limited, PCG Desk, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. And you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.